welcome to the Philadelphia Channel, spotlighting the innovators making meaningful impact throughout the region across a wide range of collaborative and creative fields, including philanthropy, education, technology, family life, social entrepreneurship, advocacy of the arts, and more. Here's your host, Robert Rim.
Jack Lynch has served as president and CEO of the nonprofit Mainline Health, suburban Philadelphia's most comprehensive healthcare system, since 2005. A former governor of the American College of Healthcare Executives, Jack is also a former chairman of the Institute for Diversity in Health Management, where he currently serves as a board member. Mainline Health includes four of the region's most respected acute care hospitals: Lankenau Medical Center, Bryn Mawr Hospital, Paoli Hospital, and Riddle Hospital, as well as Bryn Mawr Rehab Hospital, one of the country's top facilities for rehabilitative medicine. It also includes Miremont Treatment Center, among the leading addiction treatment programs in the Northeast, the Lankenau Institute for Medical Research, and Mainline Health Home Care and Hospice, which provides skilled at-home care throughout the region. Also, its Mainline Health Centers offer primary and specialty care, lab and radiology, and other outpatient services. Mainline Health's commitment to remain at the forefront with compassion and integrity includes delivering advanced medicine to treat and cure disease, focusing on prevention, disease management, and research, and training physicians and other healthcare providers. A team of more than 10,000 employees and 2,000 physicians care for patients throughout the Mainline Health System. Jack, good to have you with us today.
Robert, it's great to be with you.
Jack, tell me how Mainline Health is approaching the challenging market and the changes taking place currently in healthcare throughout the country.
Sure. And a lot of what I'm going to talk about today is probably not unique to Mainline Health. I mean, my colleagues across the country and certainly in this region are responding to the challenges that our industry is facing. But the way Mainline Health has gone about it is really digging deep and planning around our strategic plan. So we've got foundations of uncompromised quality and patient safety, patient and family-centered care, a culture of systemness and innovation, really behaving like not five individual organizations, but behaving like a single organization with multiple sites. So you could come to expect the same level of service, the same level of excellence at any one of our campuses. And then a strong infrastructure. You can't do any of this without a strong workforce, strong technology, strong financial performance, and up-to-date and strong facilities. So around that, we have our commitment to a superior experience for our patients, our employees, our physicians. We have, the next one would be our community health, where we set to improve the health of the communities we serve. The next would be to develop highly engaged employees, physicians, and partners. The next would be the value proposition, delivering outstanding value by continually improving performance. The fifth, equally important, is to advance research and education of future healthcare professionals.
And you mentioned technology. The use of new technologies reflect Mainline Health's commitment to patient quality and safety. Innovation is as crucial as ever. Artificial intelligence and predictive analytics come to mind. How does Mainline Health foster a culture of innovation and embrace change?
As I described our strategic plan, one of the areas was a commitment to innovation. And we expect our employees and our physicians to be innovative in their thinking. Let me step back a little bit. We're very, very focused on eliminating harm, top decile quality performance, eliminating disparities of care, or often referred to as equitable care across the system, and affordability. And in order to do that, we have to have creative, thoughtful, hardworking, skilled, innovative staff. We also have to be good at using technology. Now, we're in a market with some incredible healthcare providers that are partners and or owned by universities, and those individual organizations are deeply devoted to education and research in addition to their clinical care. A lot of those technologies and a lot of those capabilities exist in the community hospitals as well. But I think it's fair to say that some of the groundbreaking technology you may not find in some of the community hospitals. We're very excited because Lankenau Medical Center was one of the sites selected to have the new single port robot by Intuitive, referred to as the Da Vinci robot. One of our surgeons at Lankenau in the colorectal space, John Marks, is a very innovative colorectal surgeon that's done groundbreaking work in that space. And so we're one of three facilities in the country that just took on that technology. But there are other technologies that we have deployed that really make a difference. We were early on barcoding medication administration. So every time a patient receives drugs, their armband is barcoded, wanded, and the drug is wanded. And what it's doing is checking with the order. Is it the right time? Is it the right dose? And is it the right patient? All critical factors. We also just installed Epic, which is the electronic medical record that many in this community have, but it's new for us. And it's, again, another example of deploying technology with the intent to reduce harm, improve quality, eliminate disparities, and make care more affordable.
And cybersecurity and patient confidentiality are also key elements of the technology space, aren't they?
They are, Robert. I'm glad you brought up cybersecurity. We think of safety in our organization. Typically, it's been around the clinical space. And we learned the hard way that, you know what, we've got to think about safety for every single person sitting at a computer. Every single person that opens up emails and has access to the internet can expose our computer systems to risks. And so we've done a tremendous amount of education and routinely test our staff for phishing that would come through typically an email that potentially could harm our systems. So this whole safety culture is one that we've been really digging into and really embedding on the clinical side for almost 10 plus years. And now we're saying we've got to take those safety tools and take them all the way through the organization. And obviously the cybersecurity piece is critical. There are hospitals in this country that have been brought down from anywhere from hours to weeks as a result of ransomware or other malware that's put patients at risk. So we spend a lot of time and a lot of money to do what we can to reduce the likelihood that a cyber threat could impact our patients. The other population that we care for a great deal about is the data that we have on our own employees. And so we're very, very cautious about where we store data and who has access to data. And again, we are proud to have some pretty strong partners in the cybersecurity space helping ensure that we're staying up to date with respect to how to keep those things protected.
Yeah. And along the lines of employees, Mainline Health has cultivated an employee work environment that's received recognition from several independent rating organizations. What are your views on the current labor market in healthcare and the demographic shifts underway in the region?
Well, we do a lot of groundbreakings. We do a lot of ribbon cuttings. We do a lot of tree topping off ceremonies. When I think about the amount of money we've spent in facilities over the last 10 years, it's probably close to $1 billion of capital. But I always remind our staff and the participants in those celebratory events that really are around bricks and mortar that the greatest asset that we have is our employees and our medical staff. It's the people that create the miracles inside of all this bricks and mortar. So obviously, we can have great technology, we can have great facilities, but the most important piece of the care delivery that we provide is provided by people. And the quality of those people, the compassion, the passion, the excellence, the attention to detail, the focus, the commitment, all the things that make these jobs very, very difficult, we spend a lot of time on. We spend a lot of time on the selection of the right people, and we spend a lot of time doing our very best to retain our staff. Because quite frankly, in this market and many other markets, we're all competing for the same people. The Philadelphia market has some tremendous healthcare providers going after the same talent pool. And so we are additionally committed to not just taking the talent pool that's out there, but doing a lot with our own staff in terms of developing their talent. So we spend a lot of money and resources on continuing education, on helping to develop and train staff. We are involved in education from kids in high school, kids in college, and kids in postgraduate training to develop skills that will make them available for the healthcare market. The other challenge we have and we're committed to is to diversify our team. We have 83% of our workforce is women. We've actually made a commitment to diversify the board leadership to a more gender diverse group of individuals than it may have been in the past. We're at about 30% females on the board today, and open to and looking for greater participation there. Additional commitment to diversity is around racial and ethnic diversity, both at the leadership and within the organization. So again, many organizations are going after that same talent. So we're looking within ourselves and looking to develop that talent and take people that may come in entry level or early career opportunities and look for opportunities where those individuals can spend their entire career with us by growing and developing and taking on bigger roles than what they originally came to us with.
Yeah, and diversity, respect, and inclusion are key elements across the board, aren't they?
They are. And, you know, a lot of places talk about diversity and inclusion. And we added the word respect because I think it's the one that people all can appreciate. Everybody wants to be treated with respect. And everybody expects to be treated with respect. And when you're committed to diversity and inclusion, when you highlight the importance of that respect, I think it makes it more visible for people to understand we're not just interested in people that look different or people that are from the LGBTQ community or gender differences or age differences or racial or and ethnic or religious differences. We're interested in the individuals that come to us feeling like they're included and welcome, but also that all of our staff feel like they're being treated and treating others with respect, and then having that impact our care with our patients, that our patients feel like they've been treated with respect, that we meet them where they are. We're actually doing something that's pretty interesting, and I would say it, we're an early adopter to this. We send out patient satisfaction surveys to many of our patients after they've experienced care with us, both on the inpatient side and the outpatient side. And most recently, we made some changes to the survey where we added questions that are optional at the end of the survey, asking them to identify their gender, identity, and their sexual orientation. Now, one might say, why in the world are you asking people their gender identity and or their sexual orientation? And in fact, we've had some feedback from patients who have received those surveys really, really upset about the fact that we're asking those questions. But we're really looking to make sure that individuals that have an identity that may be different than what they might appear to have identified as feel treated with respect. We want to make sure individuals with sexual preferences that might be different than what someone might think it might be, we want to make sure that those individuals feel like they've been treated with respect. If you talk to members of the LGBTQ community and other minority groups, often you'll hear about those individuals not feeling safe when seeking health care. It's really important to us that our institution, our caregivers, our team members make you feel welcome and safe when you seek care with us. And if we don't ask those questions, I'm not sure we'll know whether those different groups are feeling like they're being treated with equity, and that's really, really important to us.
You've kept Mainline Health's mission front and center, a crucial part of which is communication. This goes a long way in maintaining and expanding meaningful engagement with both staff and patients, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, we've got a lot of things going on right now in this country that are causing people to reflect on their own values and what the values of others are. And quite frankly, I think there are some that are feeling like they have permission to be different than what we would expect them to be. And we've made it very clear, regardless of what's going on in Washington or regardless of what's going on in Harrisburg, we're absolutely committed to what I talked about earlier, and that is for everybody that comes to us, that they can expect us to do our very best to prevent harm from occurring. They can expect us to do everything we can to ensure that we give them the best possible quality experience that they can have. And in fact, we measure our quality metrics with other national organizations. And our goal is to be in the top decile in every one of those metrics. The other one that's really, really important, we speak openly about it. We recognize that this is a problem in this country, and that is we want to eliminate disparities of care. Again, I talked about equity. Everybody that experiences care when they go to a healthcare provider should feel like they're receiving equitable care and they're not being treated differently because of some difference that they may have. And then we want it to be affordable. We're working with other partners in our communities. Obviously, the payers are important partners in all of this. They're equally committed to the affordability piece, and I believe they're also committed to the harm and the safety, the quality, and the equity piece as well. And so all of us together are working hard to make sure that when somebody comes looking for care or when we're reaching out in the community around prevention and wellness, that we can be their trusted partner when they're in need of their care when they're sick and or when they are looking for advice and support in the wellness and prevention space.
And all of these elements come into play in helping to reduce physician burnout and also to maintain staff morale.
We're reading a lot these days about physician burnout. In fact, when you install electronic medical records, you really, really change the physician's world. I'd like to believe that in the long run, you make it easier for them, you make it safer for them, you enable them with tools and technologies that make you a better care provider. But change is really, really tough. And when I hear stories about physicians having to spend more time with their head in the electronic record than they're spending with their patients, that concerns me a lot. We actually have talked about an initiative of that's often referred to as getting home for dinner. We don't want our staff, whether it's physicians or non-physicians, to be spending more time documenting their care than they're spending actually providing that care to the individual. And some of that burnout you referenced is being blamed on this whole challenge and this change in the electronic medical record. So our goal, and I think my colleagues' goal, is to take these tools and these technologies and allow them to be used in a way that enables staff and physicians to be better at what they do. And I often use the iPhone example or the Android example. We all have phones. If we use those technologies just like a flip phone was able to be used 10 or 15 years ago, we spend a lot of money on a technology that we really don't need. At the same time, we're not taking full advantage of that technology. So what we're trying to do with our physicians to help eliminate burnout is to say, what are these tools and systems and processes that we're putting in place that can make you a more efficient provider, enabling you to spend more quality time with your patient and with your coworkers than you might have if we didn't have these technologies or we didn't have these processes or standards or initiatives. So a lot of hard work, not where we need to be yet, but certainly we take this burnout issue very seriously. Because again, as I referred to earlier, I can have all the bricks and the mortar, all the bricks and mortar that I need. If I don't have the staff and if I don't have the clinicians, the physicians, we're really not there for the community like we need to be.
And now a word from Arch Street Press. Better to Speak of It, Fostering Relationships and Results Through Creativity, is a book of core management and personal values written in collaboration with Clive Gillinson, Executive and Artistic Director of Carnegie Hall, offering firsthand experiences from Gillinson and the leaders of key nonprofit, corporate, educational, and cultural institutions, including the New York City Department of Education, Museum of Modern Art, New York Public Library, and Juilliard, and major performing artists such as Joyce D. Donato, Anne-Sophie Mutter, Jesse Norman, and Michael Tilson Thomas. The book appeals to readers, including nonprofit directors and managers, corporate executives and employees, arts administration staff and students, and the public interested in the health and well-being of the arts. Exploring the vital benefits of innovation and organizational management, serving others in effective partnerships, access and mentoring, budgeting and well-considered risk, media and effective communications, education, and lifelong learning. We now return to Jack and Robert.
You mentioned affordability, which is such a crucial aspect. How has the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, impacted education and the medical labor market?
So I think the biggest thing about the Affordable Care Act, and I like to refer it to it as that as opposed to pinning it on former President Obama, but I think the Affordable Care Act was a real attempt to address many, many problems that existed in healthcare, not the least of which were access, not the least of which were quality issues, safety issues, and certainly the cost of healthcare. I think a lot of things have gotten better. We've got a lot of people that have access to health care that didn't have access to health care before the Affordable Care Act. But I think with the many legislative initiatives, it's not perfect. There were interest groups, all different kinds of interest groups that had their various interests embedded in the Affordable Care Act that probably haven't been as effective and were as good as we would have liked. I think what we've ended up, quite frankly, with is a payment reform. Some things have not changed, but the payment has changed. And at Mainline Health and many other providers in this market and across the country, we lose money caring for the Medicare patient population. We lose money caring for the Medicaid population. Two populations that deserve high quality, safe, equitable, and affordable care. But depending on how much of that population your particular institution is serving can determine whether you make money or not. That said, the commercial payers are often making up the difference. And if you're an employer or you're paying for your insurance and or you're an insurance company with a commercial population, you want to see your costs going down because you don't believe, and I have to agree, why should you be paying for the government's lack of funding to meet costs? 10 years ago, we all said it was all a funding issue. We're not getting paid enough. And a number of years ago, probably 5 or 6 years ago, our industry, the hospital industry, acknowledged that we were part of the problem and that we needed to really commit to making healthcare more affordable. And so I think Mainline Health and many others are working on initiatives to make care more affordable. Provide it in the right place, provide it at the right time, do the right thing. How do we use the most efficient approach to care? How do we do it and still maintain the high quality and the safety and the equity that we're committed to and not just make it all about only affordability? So we have an initiative that we refer to as Performance Excellence 2020. We've been working on this for a couple of years, and it's really around those four things I talk about, and that's the safety, the quality, the equity, and the affordability. But one of the areas we're very focused in is, what are the things we're doing that are not added value? Are people spending more time in post-acute care than they need to? Are people having things done in the inpatient side that can be done on the outpatient side? So again, all of these things, and I could go on and on and on about the initiatives that we're working on, are an effort to make care more affordable. We spend at Mainline Health well over $100 million in providing medical care to our own employees and their dependents. And so we're not only a provider of care, but I'm a purchaser of care. So as a very large employer, I'm empathetic to the other employers in our community about how much they're spending to provide coverage for their employees. Again, we haven't figured this one out yet completely, but I think we're on a road to making care much more affordable. And I think we've got a lot of partners in this and working on helping to do that.
And all of what you described as you're talking, Jack, it seems that these things directly help Mainline Health adapt and stay proactive in an era that's characterized by uncertainty and such rapid change.
Well, Robert, you described something I think is completely accurate. And the worst thing in the world you can have is in a community where your hospital partners are not doing these kinds of things, and eventually they find themselves not making money, and they find themselves then losing money, and then they find themselves not able to purchase technology, not able to purchase the costly electronic medical records, not able to retain and attract the high-quality staff. And there are communities around this country where they've lost their hospital providers because they've not been able to do it. Now, I would say some have not been able to do it because they're stewardship over their resources wasn't where it needed to be. And others aren't able to do it because they've got a very bad payer mix or they're in a very, very challenged market. But I think a lot of us in this industry are working hard to be really good stewards of the community's resources to ensure that we're here for the long haul. I'll give you a good example. You know, a lot of people get upset that when we tell them, if you want to work for us, you have to have a flu shot. And if you don't want to get a flu shot, we can't have you on our team. And you might ask, well, Jack, that's kind of old time. You know, if you want to work here, this is what you have to do. Well, this community expects me and our team to be available to them when this community gets struck with a huge flu outbreak. Well, if 40 or 50% of my employees decided they didn't want to get the flu shot, and all of a sudden I find that I have 40 to 50% of my staff end up with the flu, I'm not able to provide for this community as this community expects me to. So we do things with the goal of being able to meet our mission, and that means not just being able to improve the health over time, but in the time of a crisis, in the time of a traumatic event in the community, or the time of a flu outbreak, or the time of somebody with chest pain, we need to have the staff prepared along with the technology and facilities to meet those needs.
And what's your assessment of the current environment in healthcare reform with what seem like endless potential changes to the Affordable Care Act?
You know, I'm not sure where it's going to go. I think that we at Mainline have made a commitment that while there's a lot of things going on in the legislative space, we're committed to staying very focused on our mission. That is our guiding light. So we have a vision statement that we stay focused on, be the healthcare provider of choice in leading and optimizing the health of all in the community. And I boil that down to, we want to improve the health status of the community. We want to, in our mission statement, provide comprehensive range of safe, high quality health services, complemented by related educational and research activities that meet the healthcare needs and improve the quality of life in the communities we serve. So we take very seriously our effort to understand what are those community health needs. We do a community health needs assessment every couple years as a system and look at what are those needs in the community. And then we spend a lot of time focused on how we can do a better job. But our industry is challenged. We as a country are not meeting the mental health needs of our communities. And that's one of the things Mainline Health is looking at as to how we could do a better job meeting the mental health needs. We've got the opioid crisis going on. How do we make sure that we don't contribute to the addiction problem? And then once the addiction problems are identified, how do we help those individuals that have been impacted by that deadly addiction? Lots of other things. We have a program at Bryn Mawr Rehab that we used to refer to as Cruisin' Not Boozin', and it's now referred to as Cruisin' Smart. This whole issue around distracted drivers. We have two trauma centers, one at Paoli and one at Lankinol, very focused on how do we reduce the likelihood that someone's going to be involved in a traumatic event, and what can we do as a healthcare system to provide education to the community. Lots of other examples. One of the things I think that can make the biggest difference, and it's important in the effort of healthcare reform, is advanced care planning. Your audience probably ought to ask themselves, as they think about their own healthcare needs, do they understand their parents' wishes? Do they understand their own wishes? Have they made their wishes clear? Because often our physicians and clinicians are faced with families who don't know what the wishes were of their loved ones when all of a sudden they're in the intensive care unit and tough questions are having to be asked. Well, when you look at the kind of money that's spent in the last 30 to 60 days of life, often not real beneficial care because the outcome is going to be the outcome. A family member understanding what that patient's wishes are really changes everybody's experience. I was fortunate to know exactly what my father's wishes were if he were to get terminally ill, and all of my sisters were in agreement with understanding what his wishes were. His wife understood what his wishes were, and unfortunately, he fell one night and ended up in an intensive care unit and was not going to make it out of the hospital. And so knowing what his wishes were, we were able to make decisions that were of his interest, maybe not ours, but of his interest. And while we probably impacted the cost of care in a favorable way, the best part of it was he didn't have to go through undue suffering as a result of lots of technology capabilities and lots of medical procedures that could have been done that would not have changed the outcome.
Such crucial initiatives, Jack, and empathy, in addition to technology, to employees, research, good stewards of community resources. And on these notes, listeners can find out more about Mainline Health and its vital initiatives at mainlinehealth.org. Jack, good to have you with us today, and all the best to you and Mainline Health as you continue to live by your mission.
Robert, thanks. It's been a delight speaking with you, and I hope your audience enjoys our conversation.
Access, stream, and download the Philadelphia Channel bi-weekly, part of the International Innovate podcast series on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, iTunes, and online at innovatepodcast.org. On behalf of the Philadelphia Channel team and our collaborators, good to have you join us.